So it's very important that we get the voices of our comrades behind bars out to the public through events like this, and also in print. MIM Notes has two pages that are always dedicated to prisoners. It's called Under Lock and Key, and it gives them a chance to communicate with the outside world and also with each other, because people who are on the SHU don't usually have much contact with other prisoners. They'll be lucky if they can talk to a couple other prisoners nearby. So the Under Lock and Key is a great forum for them to communicate with each other. Our next speaker is Ketsa from the Biodefense Committee. Biodefense has been at the forefront of the struggle to abolish the SHU on the streets for many years. And Ketsa has spoken on this issue probably hundreds of times, so I will let her take it from here.
First of all, I'd like to thank you all for allowing me to speak. And I come here on behalf of the Barrio Defense Committee. It's a community-based organization in San Jose. And, you know, it's just a community-based organization. And one of the main campaigns that we're involved in is around the prisons. Because the fact of the matter is that almost every family in our community has somebody locked up in these concentration camps. What we have seen is that not only are they captured by the various police agencies that exist in our communities, such as the PDs, sheriffs, MIGRA, probation officers, different agencies that capture us, and ultimately, send us to different detention centers, whether they be CYAs, juveniles, state prisons, federal prisons. We get captured by these agencies, and we get sent to these concentration camps that the U.S. government calls prisons. For a very long time. Many times the sentences are doubled with the use of various laws, federal laws and state laws that are implemented, such as the Weed and Seed Program, which is a federal law. It's a federal program that is implemented in the barrios, in the poor communities, which basically holds hostage the community by saying that if you need resources, you have to operate under the U.S. government terms. The weed is that the police agencies are allowed to go into the communities to capture people, and they use different institutions, which is the seed, to give to resources to community organizations, so that police agencies can operate through community organizations. Weed and Seed, also, if you're captured in the area where Weed and Seed exists, then people get double sentences, sometimes triple sentences, if they're captured and sent to prison. So we have those kinds of programs. So ultimately what we see, coming from the perspective of the Mexican community, from La Raza, is that there's a great number of our people that are being stolen from us and put in these detention institutions for a very, very long time. If we are captured with, say, for example, the drugs that are being infested in our community, then we get double time. Sometimes it's triple. So it's not a surprise when we get sentenced for 20, 30, 40, just incredible amounts of years that are just so unreal, lifetime sentences. And now what we have seen is that a lot of our gente are being stuffed in these control units that in California they're called security housing units. Control units are basically to break down a human being physically and mentally by denying them the five human senses: no touch, no noise, no taste, no view of anybody. And that breaks down because we're social people. We have to connect with people. We're social. And so psychologically they break us down. And when they see that we resist their attacks, they break us down. I'm telling you because of the experience that I've had with my own child who was captured as a result of defending himself from a North American, and they tried to give him the death penalty. The thing about it is that thanks to the organizational efforts, we were able to stop the state from killing my son. But they did give him 16 years to life. And as soon as they was sent to prison, the attacks began. We followed him throughout the various kinds of prisons, and we learned that the prisons independently run themselves. Each prison does what they want to do. High Desert runs in a different way than Corcoran or Lancaster or any other place. So when my son was sent to High Desert, they operated in a militaristically form, in which they saw the prisoners as their enemy. The guards were dressed in khakis. They were dressed in military uniform, and their response to any kind of action was as if they were at war with the prisoners. It was very violent. Our experience was that we campaigned to move Jose Luis out of there when we exposed these brutal attacks that were going on, demanding that he be transferred to a prison close to his family. So they moved him to Mule Creek State Prison. And what we learned in Mule State State Prison was that there, what they do is that for La Raza, is that they try to get the prisoners to serve for the California Department of Corrections as informants. Once they get the cooperation of the prisoners, then they distribute him throughout the prisons. They try to do that with Jose Luis, and what we did was expose them, and campaigned, and demanded that they stop attacking Jose Luis. So they had to move him out of Mule Creek State Prison, and they moved him to New Folsom Prison. And in New Folsom Prison, there they basically had most of La Raza in lockdown 24 hours, 7 days a week. And supposedly they were not in the SHU, but at the same time, they were operating as if they were in the SHU. And here, what we saw is that many times they say that they're in administrative segregation or temporarily in lockdown, which ultimately is basically in the SHU anyway. So, so the prisoners organized and exposed the attacks by the local prison administration by keeping them in lockdown and creating this conflict between prisoners, especially Raza, creating this conflict that that most of the people that had, they had on lockdown were supposedly from the northern part of California, thus calling them northerners, and allowing prisoners from the southern part of California to have yard and to have access to telephone visits and certain rights that prisoners had, thus creating this conflict. They had locked down most of the people that came from the northern part, such as San Jose, Sacramento, San Francisco, Oakland, all that area that they considered northern. The other thing that I wanted to tell you was that in New Folsom Prison, they also tried to label the families, you know, in these sections, and they would ask the parents, the families, if they were northerners or southerners, insinuating if we were also part of these factions that they call gangs. We had conflicts and we had some intense struggles with the guards that would label us when we would go and visit our families. So ultimately, they had most of the people that they considered from the northern part of California in lockdown. The prisoners decided to go on a hunger strike and to expose the attacks by these guards and the prison administration. And they were in a hunger strike collective, organizationally hunger strike. And please keep in mind that we had several demonstrations in front of New Folsom. We were continuously passing flyers and continuously exposing the prisons for what they are, and exposing the attacks on raza. And this gave rise to organization inside New Folsom Prison. The hunger strike occurred in November and began on November 20th, 1999. November 20th is a very special day for the Mexican people because it is a day when we celebrate the 1910 Mexican Revolution. And every year, November 20th is very special. The people that came out on a hunger strike were all raza, all Mexican. And so it was a message to people that the reality is that we as Mexican people continue, with the struggle for our freedom, for our land, and for our own self-determination. And this was a very significant action and event, as a whole for the entire population, especially for the prisoners, because the prisoners are in a state where the U.S. government uses its most violent institution called prisons to attack people, to control people from organizing ourselves around injustices. And so this was the expression of 68 Mexican prisoners that came out on a hunger strike for a whole month. They collectively did this action, and to the point where we were getting communication as to what was going on from other prisoners, African prisoners, other prisoners that were from Southern California that were telling us what was going on. Because it lasted so long, this message was gotten by other prisoners in other state prisons, such as Pelican Bay, High Desert, Tracy, and different other prisons, where they also came out in different kinds of actions when they heard about this hunger strike. So as a result, Governor Gray Davis at that time had to step in and break the hunger strike and ordered 16 of the prisoners to be distributed throughout the state of California, if not outside of California. 7 of them were sent to the security housing units. Some were sent to Pelican Bay and some were sent to Corcoran. My son was sent to Corcoran State Prison, where he continues to be there, where they had validated him, which means that they supposedly 3 days before he was sent to Corcoran, which was December 17, 1999, supposedly they had evidence that he was a gang member. And according to their rules and regulations, their evidence is that if somebody informs on you, if you have communication with somebody that's a so-called gang member, or that you have communication with them, then that determines that you are validated and sent to the SHU. Somebody had informed on Jose Luis. The thing about it is that there's no way that prisoners can defend themselves when they are validated. They have no way of defending themselves from whomever is, you know, accusing them of being gang members. So what we have learned from Jose Luis being in the security housing unit is that the prison guards, the administration, are arbitrary. They decide who is sent. They don't necessarily have to have some concrete evidence. There's no way that the prisoners can defend themselves, from these accusations that are going to keep them in these control units forever, for their entire prison life. The only way that you can get out of the security housing unit is by paroling, by dying, or serving as an informant, of which many prisoners, out of desperation, will do. Because if you put yourself in a closet for 24 hours, for several days, you're going to break. And, many of these prisoners are there for many, many years, many years. My son has been in the SHU since 1999. And, he has lost part of his eyesight. He has arthritis, and he's 30 years old. None of my children wear glasses now. He has to wear glasses. When I go and see him, he has to wear dark glasses because of the lighting system that they have. Most of the prisoners have to wear dark glasses when they get out and visit with their families. These are personal experiences that I have seen as a result of the security housing unit. And so, our campaign is not only to get Jose Luis out of the SHU, but that the SHU, the security housing units, must be shut down. They have to be shut down because they're cruel and unusual punishment. They are similar to what is going on in Iraq, in Abu Ghraib. They are similar to what's going on in Guantanamo Bay, because the fact of the matter is the people that operated the prisons in Guantanamo Bay came out of the prisons here in the U.S. They were guards, they were wardens, they were also PDs. So they got trained. And how did they get trained out of? Was our people, the African people, mostly Raza, that are in those prisons. In Corcoran, 90% of the people that are in the SHU are Mexican, okay? 90%, if not more. If you go up to Pelican Bay, it's the same, African and Mexican. I don't know what the percentage is, but according to the families, they tell me that most of the people that are in the SHU are Mexican. Now, we ask ourselves, why is it that there are so many of our raza inside these prisons? And so the fact of the matter is that in California, it's not logical. That some people say, well, because there's a great number of raza in California. There's a large percentage of a population of raza in California. And that is true. The thing about it is that if that's the case, then why isn't it that the percentage of graduates from the university, why isn't it that the number is high? Why is it that that our children are not graduating from the high schools as they should be if there's a large number of our kids in the schools? Why is it that there's such a large number of our people that are in poverty? The majority of our people that make less than $20,000 a year. So the numbers just don't, they just don't add up. The numbers of businesses just don't add up. There's a very small number of professionals from our community. There's a very small number of people that are going to the universities that are graduating from high school. There's a very large number of our people that are dropouts, but yet there's a very large number of our people that are in the prisons. Juveniles, state prisons, federal prisons, every kind of detention center that you can think of, there's a large number of our people inside these detention centers. Now, the thing is that because this is a planned campaign, the U.S. government knows exactly what they are doing. And we have to understand that the reason why we are in these concentration camps is because we as Mexican people have always been living in these lands. These are occupied lands. This is an occupied territory. This is similar to what the Palestinian people are going through right now. Just 150-odd years ago, our lands were stolen from us, and then we were called illegal aliens. When we have been living here for thousands and thousands of years, this is our ancestral lands, and we have never given them up. We have roots here. The Aztecs, which only lasted for 300 years, they originated in Utah. Okay, that's their origins. So we have roots here, and the U.S. government knows it. And so we continue to travel our lands, we continue to maintain ourselves in our lands, and one day we will be free and continue to operate as we did before, flourish as we did before, to develop our own societies for our own selves, for the needs of our own people. That is the reason why the U.S. government must attack our gente. And so we understand it. But many times, the North American population does not, many times they do not want to. Many times it could be because of complacency. Many times because of denial that this is indigenous land. But the fact is that this is indigenous land, and it must be recognized. And if we don't recognize this, we will not have, we will not be free from this tyranny that exists right now in this country with this government, with this system that has never, ever operated for human beings. It has never been for human beings. And so long as this system exists, we will be under the chains forever. So our role is very important as indigenous people. We want to be able to be free. We want to be able to have our own system. The capitalist system does not work for us. It has never worked for us, and it never will work for us. Thank you very much. I don't know if people want any concrete information in terms of the campaigns, but we've been doing a lot of work, building a coalition, a statewide coalition to shut down the SHU, bringing it back to the barrios. We recently came from San Diego, where there was a massive demonstration around the attacks of Raza by the Migra military force that is responsible for the deaths of 3,000 of our gente that have crossed the illegal border, the military border. So we were present, and it was very powerful. We were there to let people know that we have to shut down these concentration camps, and we need all the support that we can get. The coalition is very important. We're bringing in more people. We just came back from a statewide meeting in Oxnard. The people in Oxnard are down. They want to join in this coalition. The people from San Diego are also receptive to joining into this coalition. We have people in Sacramento that are also participating. Getting signatures to shut down the SHU. Right now, we're in the process of organizing a national conference on prisons and security housing units. That's going to be October the 2nd, I believe, 2005. It's going to be held in Oxnard because it's the middle of the state. Thank you very much.